time to help one gentleman.
Lily! Lily, is it Mr. Conroy? Oh, Julia, what's keeping Gabriel?
He'll be coming.
Hello, sir. It's Mr. Kerrigan, Miss Kate, Miss Julia.
Thank you, Lily. As long as it's not Freddie Mallon's coming late, he's sure to turn up screwed. Oh, I do hope it isn't Freddie. His poor mother. You remember how he was, Julia, last year?
I think it's Gabriel. Can you see downstairs?
Hello, Mr. Conroy.
Hello, Lily.
Miss Kate and Miss Julia thought you were never coming. Hello, Mrs. Conroy.
Hello, Lily.
I'll engage they did, but forgot that my wife here takes 3 mortal hours to dress herself.
Listen to him now.
Miss Kate, here's Mrs. Conroy.
They are here. Come, Julia, now mind the stairs. Be careful.
Oh, here, let me take this, Mr. Conroy.
Thank you.
Oh, it is you. Greta, you must be perished alive.
Come upstairs with us.
Thank you, Aunt Julia.
Is Gabriel
here? Here I am. Right as mail, Aunt Kate. Go on up, I'll follow.
Is it snowing again, Mr. Conroy?
It is, yes, Lily, and I think we're in for a night of it. Tell me, Lily, do you still go to school?
Oh, no, sir. I'm done schooling this year and more.
Oh, then I suppose we'll be going to your wedding one of these fine days with your young man, huh? Huh?
The man that is now is only all palaver and what they can get out of you.
Oh, I see. There. That's both galoshes off. Oh, Lily, it's Christmas time, isn't it? Just, well, here's a little something.
Oh.
Just a coin.
Oh, no, sir. Really, sir. I wouldn't take
Christmas
it.
Christmas time.
But sir,
I'm already on my way up the stairs.
Well, thank you, sir.
Where? Here's the paper. Don't know why I agree to make this speech every year. Do I add the Browning? Will it be above their heads? They won't recognize it. Better with Shakespeare, perhaps. Oh, I'll sound ridiculous reciting poetry. Poetry they wouldn't understand. I'll fail with them, as I have with Lily just now. This whole speech is a mistake, from first to last. An utter failure.
Gabriel, we're so glad you're here.
Thank you, Aunt Kate.
It isn't the same when you're not here.
Ah.
Our annual dance is not complete without our Gabriel.
No. Oh, you're our favourite, you know.
That's kind of you, Aunt Julia.
Greta tells me you're not going to take a cab back to Monkstown tonight.
No, we had quite enough of that last year, hadn't we, Greta?
We did.
Don't you remember, Aunt Kate, what a cold Greta got out of it. Cab windows rattling all the way, and the east wind blowing in after we passed Merion. Oh, very jolly it was. She caught a dreadful cold.
Oh, quite right, Gabriel, quite right. Mm-hmm. You can't be too careful.
But as for Greta, well, she'd walk home in the snow if she were let.
Oh, Greta!
Don't mind him, Aunt Kate. He's an awful bother. What with the green shades for Tom's eyes at night and making him do the dumbbells and forcing Eva to eat the stirabout. The poor child. And she simply hates the sight of it. Oh, but you'll never guess what he makes me wear now. Galoshes! That's the latest. Whenever it's wet underfoot, I must put on my galoshes. Tonight, even. He wanted me to put them on, but I wouldn't. The next thing he'll buy me will be a diving suit.
Oh, a diving suit?
And what are galoshes, Gabriel?
Galoshes, Julia. Goodness me, don't you know what galoshes are? You wear them over your boots, Greta, isn't it?
Yes, gutta-percha things. Mm. We both have a pair now. Gabriel says everyone wears them on the continent.
Oh, on the continent?
Nothing very wonderful, but Greta thinks it very funny because she says the word reminds her of Christy Minstrels.
Oh, but tell me, Gabriel, Of course, you've seen about the room. Greta was saying that
Room is all right. I've taken one in the Gresham.
Oh, to be sure. By far the best thing to do. And the children, Greta, you're not anxious about them?
Oh, for one night. Besides, Bessie will look after them.
Oh, to be sure. Yeah. What a comfort it is to have a girl like that. One you can depend on. There's that Lily. Now, I'm sure I don't know what has come over her lately. She's not the girl she was...
Now, I find she's... You know.
Oh, now, I ask you, where is Julia going? Down the stairs. Now, Julia, where are you going? Oh, look at her. Now, back up again. Julia!
Here's Freddy.
Oh, dear Lord. Gabriel. Slip down like a good fellow and see if he's all right. And don't let him up if he's screwed. I'm sure he's screwed. I'm sure he is.
Of course, Aunt Kate. I'll go down and see.
Oh, Greta, it's such a relief that Gabriel is here. I always feel easier in my mind when he's here. Julia, there's Miss Daly and Miss Power. We'll take some refreshment. Thank you for your beautiful waltz, Miss Daly. It made lovely time.
And may we have some refreshment too, Miss Morgan?
Julia, here's Mr. Brown and Miss Furlong. Take them in, Julia, with Miss Daly and Miss Power.
Oh, I'm the man for the ladies. You know, Miss Morgan, the reason they are so fond of me is... she's off. Well, come, young ladies, this way. Well, look at this room, how laid out. Would you like some ladies' punch? What about you, Miss Furlong? It's hot, strong, and sweet.
Oh, that would be a bit much, I'm afraid.
Of course. There's lemonade. Here, let me pour you some. There you go. Oh. Now, excuse me, sir. I just want to reach for that decanter. I'm so sorry to be in your way. Now, let me see how this whiskey is. Mm-hmm. Quite nice. God help me, it's the doctor's orders.
Oh, now, Mr. Brown.
Yes, Miss Furlong.
I'm sure the doctor never ordered anything of the kind.
Well, you see, I'm like the famous Mrs. Cassidy, who is reported to have said, "Now, Mary Grimes, if I don't take it, make me take it, for I feel I want it."
Oh, I think it's time for quadrilles. Quadrilles.
Two gentlemen and three ladies, Mary Jane.
Oh, yes. Here's Mr. Bergen and Mr. Kerrigan. Mr. Kerrigan, will you take Miss Power? Miss Furlong, may I get you a partner? Mr. Bergen? Oh, that'll do just now.
Three ladies, Mary Jane.
Oh, yes. Miss Daly, you're really awfully good after playing for the last two dances. But really, we're so short of ladies tonight. And I've a nice partner for you, Mr. Bartle Darcy, the tenor. Oh. I'll get him to sing later on. All Dublin is raving about him.
Lovely voice. Oh, Julia, I didn't see you. What is the matter? Who is it?
It's only Freddy, Kate, and Gabriel is with him.
And then he was just about to sit. He heard a whistle, the loudest whistle in all of Dublin.
Come, Freddy, you can be respectable. You with your face all fleshy and pallid, touched with colour only at the thick hanging lobes of your ears and the wide wings of your nose. Your coarse features, the blunt nose, the convex and receding brow, the protruded lips, your heavy-lidded eyes, the disorder of your scanty hair makes you look sleepy. All the same, you still managed to make it.
Good evening, Freddy.
Good evening, Miss Julia. Oh, a splendid night. It's so splendid.
Gabriel, he's not so bad, is he?
Oh, no, hardly noticeable.
Oh, now isn't he a terrible fellow? And his poor mother made him take the pledge on New Year's Eve. Come on, Gabriel, come into the drawing room. You, Mr. Brown, you be careful with Freddy.
Now then, Teddy. I'm going to fill you out a good glass of lemonade. Well, just to buck you up.
Here you go. Well, thank you very much. And so, the whistle was so loud, every horse in the county reared up, I tell you. It's reared up. And let me tell you, that there's a holiday for it now. For every horse, I swear it to be I swear it to be true. That is how Rearing Day came to be.
That's a good one, Teddy. I never heard of such a thing, but with the right medicine, such as I have here, I'm inclined to believe, you know.
To Rearing Day.
I'll drink to that.
Come along. Gather round. Yes, come around. It is delightful to have our beloved Mary Jane play for you now.
Oh, Aunt Kate, I...
Oh, now, come on. You see, there's no getting away from it, Mary Jane.
Here, let me remove myself out of the way.
You don't have to.
Oh, Mary Jane, yes. Here you go. So come sit. Her talent is known, and now we shall have first-hand witness.
Thank you, Aunt Kate.
I can't listen to Mary Jane. I like music, but this has no melody for me. Most likely for the other listeners. I'm sure of it. Aunt Kate is so happy turning the music pages, glowing like the beeswax glittering on the floor, from the chandelier casting its shadows on the picture from Romeo and Juliet hanging in the wall in front of me. There's another. A picture done by Aunt Julia in wools of red, blue, and brown. Probably done when she was a girl. The sort of thing she learned to do, like my mother. How I remember the birthday present of a waistcoat of purple tabinet with little foxes' heads upon it, lined with brown satin, with little round mulberry buttons. Strange that Mother had no musical talent. Though Aunt Kate used to call her the brains carrier of the Morkan family. She and Julia, always proud of their serious and matronly sister. It was she, after all, who chose the names for her sons. She was sensible of the dignity of family life. Thanks to her, Constantine was now senior curate in Balbriggan. And thanks to her, I took my degree in the Royal University. Why was she so opposed to my marrying Greta, calling her country cute? Which is not true at all. It was Greta, after all, who nursed her during all of her last long illness at Monkstown. I remember.
Oh, thank you. Thank you all so much.
Well deserved, Mary Jane. Well deserved.
Thank you, Aunt Kate.
Mr. Conroy.
Miss Ivers, isn't it?
Yes.
Seems another dance is starting.
Indeed. Lancers are being arranged and it looks as if you're my partner.
Well, so it is. May I?
Of course.
You dance well, Miss Ivers.
Thank you. I have a crow to pluck with you.
With me?
Yes.
What is it?
Who is G.C.?
What?
Oh, innocent Amy. I have found out that you write for the Daily Express. Now aren't you ashamed of yourself?
Why should I be ashamed of myself?
Well, I'm ashamed of you to say you'd write for a rag like that. I didn't think you were a West Briton.
Well, in addition to teaching, I do write a column for the Daily Express and on occasion write reviews of books. You and I both teach, and I don't see... Well, there's nothing political in writing reviews of books. I don't see how it makes me a West Briton.
Oh, of course, I was only joking. Come, we cross now. Actually, that's how I found out your secret. Your review of Browning's poems. A friend of mine had shown it to me. It was quite wonderful. I liked the review immensely.
Thank you.
Oh, Mr. Conroy, Mr. Conroy, will you come for an excursion to the Erin Isles this summer? We're going to stay there a whole month. It will be splendid out in the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. You ought to come. Mr. Clancy is coming, and Mr. Kilkelly and Kathleen Kearney. It would be splendid for Greta, too, if she'd come. She's from Connacht, isn't she?
Her people are.
But you will come, won't you?
Well, the fact is, I've already arranged to go...
Go where?
Well, you know, every year I go for a cycling tour with some fellows and...
But
some...
where?
Well, we usually go to France or Belgium or perhaps Germany.
And why do you go to France or Belgium instead of visiting your own land?
Well, it's partly to keep in touch with the languages and partly for a change.
And haven't you your own language to keep in touch with? Irish?
Well, if it comes to that, you know, Irish is not my language.
And haven't you your own land to visit that you know nothing of? Your own people and your own country?
To tell you the truth, I'm sick of my own country. Sick of it.
Why? Why? Of course, you've no answer.
West Britain.
Oh, there's Mrs. Mallins. Will you excuse me?
Of course.
Hello, Mrs. Mallins. May I sit?
It would be very kind of you, Gabriel. I hear my son is here and nearly all right.
Yes, indeed. How was your crossing?
Oh, a most beautiful crossing. The captain was so attentive.
And you live with your married daughter in Glasgow?
Yes, I come once a year now to Dublin. My daughter has a lovely house, well kept, and so many nice friends we both have. Have you been there, Mr. Conroy? It's a lovely place.
Why did Miss Ivers go on like that? She's an enthusiast, of course, but there's a time
weather
for all things.
Much,
she has no right to call
like
me a West
that,
Briton.
Isn't it? We have
even
here
a joke,
too,
making me look ridiculous.
But my
heckling
daughter
like
takes
that.
Good care of me.
Oh, there's Greta.
Hello, Mrs. Mallon.
Hello.
Gabriel and Kate wants to know, won't you carve the goose as usual? Miss Daly will carve the ham and I'll do the pudding.
All right.
She's sending in the younger ones first, so that we'll have the table to ourselves.
Were you dancing?
Of course I was. Didn't you see me? What words had you with Molly Ivers?
No words. Why? What did she say?
Nothing. Now, I'm trying to get that Mr. Darcy to sing. He's full of conceit, I think.
There were no words. Only she wanted me to go for a trip to the west of Ireland, and I said I wouldn't.
Oh, do go, Gabriel. I'd love to see Galway again.
You can go if you like.
Well, what do you think of that? There's a nice husband for you, Mrs. Mallins. Now, don't forget the goose, Gabriel.
No, of course.
There are such beautiful places in Scotland, such beautiful scenery.
Yes, I'm sure.
My son-in-law every year takes us to the lakes to go fishing. He's a splendid fisherman. One day, you know, he caught this fish, a beautiful big, big fish, and the man in the hotel boiled it for our dinner. It was so,
oh, look,
so
Freddy.
Beautiful.
Freddy, come sit next to your mother.
Hello.
Here, sit next to your mother, Freddy.
Yes, all right. And how are you, mother?
I'm fine, Freddy.
Gabriel, no need
to
leave.
I'm just going to see
now,
what it's like outside the window.
All right, Gabriel.
And why were you so late tonight, Freddy?
I had a meeting, Mother.
I'm sure I know where that meeting took place.
You do?
Freddy.
How fresh it seems outside. How pleasant it would be to walk out alone, first along by the river, and then through the park, the snow lying on the branches of the trees and forming a bright cap on top of Wellington Monument. How much more pleasant it would be there than at the supper table. Oh, my speech, let me see. Irish hospitality, sad memories, the three graces, Paris, Browning. Browning. God, thought-tormented music. My review. Was Miss Ivers sincere in praising my review? Doesn't she have a life outside of all her propagandism? Yeah, there she'll sit at the table with her critical eyes. She won't be sorry to see me fail in my speech. I'll say, alluding to Aunt Kate and Aunt Julia, ladies and gentlemen, the generation which is now in the wane among us may have had its faults, but for my part, I think it had certain qualities of hospitality, of humour, of humanity, which the new and very serious and hyper-educated generation that is growing up around us seems to me to lack. Very good. That's one for Miss Ivors. What do I care that my aunts are only two ignorant old women?
Yeah. Right. Yes, yes, Miss Julia, this way. Excuse us. Thank you. I give you Miss Julia Morgan, who will give us the honor of singing for us tonight. Mary Jane?
Yes, I'm ready.
If you please.
Beautiful, beautiful.
How wonderful, wasn't it, Mother? Oh, Miss Julia, I was telling my mother, I never heard you sing so well. Never. No, I never heard your voice so good as it is tonight. Now, oh, would you believe that now? Oh, that's the truth. Upon my word and honor, I never heard your voice sound so fresh and so clear and fresh. Never.
Your compliments are inspiring, Mr. Mann.
Yes, yes, Miss Julia Morgan. My latest discovery.
Mr. Brown.
Well, Brown, if you're serious, you might make a worse discovery. All I can say, I never heard you sing half so well as long as I'm coming here. And that's the honest truth.
Neither did I. I think her voice has greatly improved. Oh,
30 years ago, I hadn't a bad voice, as voices go.
I often told Julia...
Yes, Miss Kate.
...that she was simply thrown away in that choir. But she never would be said by me. No, she wouldn't be said or led by anyone slaving there in that choir, night and day, night and day. 6 o'clock on Christmas morning... And all for what?
Well, listen to for the honour of God, Aunt Kate.
I know all about the honour of God, Mary Jane. But I think it's not at all honourable for the Pope to turn out the women out of the choirs. The women that have slaved there all their lives and put little whippersnappers of boys over their heads. I suppose it is for the good of the church if the Pope does it, but it's not just, Mary Jane, and it's not right.
Now, Aunt Kate, you're giving scandal to Mr. Brown, who is of the other persuasion.
Oh, I don't question the Pope's being right. I'm only a stupid old woman, and I wouldn't presume to do such a thing. But there's such a thing as common everyday politeness and gratitude. And if I were in Julia's place, I'd tell that Father Healy straight up to his face.
And besides, Aunt Kate, we really are all hungry. And when we are hungry, we are all very quarrelsome.
And when we are thirsty, we are also quarrelsome.
So that we had better go to supper and finish the discussion afterwards.
Well,
well, all then. Come along, everyone. Come in, in this way.
Really? Surely you'll stay for some supper, Molly.
I'm fine, Greta. I'm not in the least bit hungry, and I've already overstayed my time.
But only for 10 minutes, Molly. That won't delay you.
To take a pick itself after all your dancing. Tell her, Gabriel.
I really couldn't, Mary Jane.
Oh, I'm afraid you didn't enjoy yourself at all.
Ever so much, I assure you. But you really must let me run off now.
But how can you get home?
Oh, it's only 2 steps up the quay.
If you will allow me, Miss Ivors, I'll see you home if you really are obliged to go.
I won't hear of it. For goodness sake, go into your suppers and don't mind me. I'm quite well able to take care of myself.
Well, you're the comical girl, Molly.
Banach live.
Now, where is Gabriel? Where on earth is Gabriel? There's everyone waiting in there, stage to let, and nobody to carve the goose.
Here I am, Aunt Kate, ready to carve a flock of geese if necessary.
Well, come along in then.
Oh, look at this feast.
No.
A fat brown goose, a great ham, spiced beef, jelly and jam, raisins and almonds, Smyrna figs.
Yes.
Custard with nutmeg, apples and oranges, stout and ale.
We'll be here another evening, Mr. Conroy, if you describe it all.
That is indeed true, Mr. Brown. So, Miss Furlong, what shall I send you? A wing or a slice of the breast?
Oh, just a small slice of the breast.
I had suggested applesauce, but Aunt Kate wanted...
Plain roast goose without applesauce has always been good enough for me, and I hope to never eat worse. Lily, don't forget the potatoes.
Yes, Miss Kate.
All right. Now, Miss Julia and Miss Kate, you both must sit down and join us. We're properly cared for, I'm sure of it.
Mr. Brown is right.
Oh, there's time enough for that.
No. Here now, I'm sitting you down. Come, both of you. Here you go. Now, sit yourselves down.
Well done, Freddy. Now, if anyone wants a little more of what vulgar people call stuffing, let him or her speak.
Oh, Gabriel, you should sit down yourself. You must be starving. Take your plate.
Very well, then. Kindly forget my existence, ladies and gentlemen, for a few minutes.
Have you seen the opera company at the Theatre Royal, Mr. Darcy?
Oh, I have, Miss Furlong.
Oh.
The leading contralto, I'd say, deserves much praise.
Well, I think she might have a rather vulgar style of production.
Have you been to the panto at the Gaiety? Now, there's a Negro singing in the second part of the panto who, I have to say, has one of the finest tenor voices I have ever heard. Have you heard him, Mr. Darcy?
No, I haven't.
Because I very much like to hear your opinion of him. I think he has a grand voice.
It takes Teddy to find out the really good things.
My name is Freddy, if you please. And why couldn't he have a voice too? Is it because he's a black?
One of my pupils gave me a pass for Mignon. Of course, it was very fine, but it made me think of poor Georgia Burns.
I can go back further still to the old Italian companies that used to come to Dublin. Tejan, Ilma de Murska, Campanini, the great Trebelli, Ravelli, Aramburo. Those were the days when there was something like singing to be heard in Dublin. The top gallery of the Royal used to be packed night after night. One night, an Italian tenor sung 5 encores to Let Me Like a Soldier Fall. Introducing a high C every time. Back then, the gallery boys would, in their enthusiasm, unyoke the horses from the carriage of some great prima donna and pull her themselves through the streets to her hotel. Why don't they ever play the grand old operas now? Because they could not get the voices to sing them.
That's why. I presume they're as good singers today as they were then.
Where are they?
In London, Paris, Milan, Suppose Caruso, for example, is quite as good, if not better, than any of the men you've mentioned.
Maybe so, but I may tell you I doubt it strongly.
Oh, I'd give anything to hear Caruso sing. Oh.
For me, there was only one tenor. To please me, I mean. But I suppose none of you ever heard of him.
Who was he, Miss Morgan?
His name was Parkinson. I heard him when he was in his prime, and I think he had then the purest tenor voice that was ever put into a man's throat.
Strange. I've never even heard of him.
Yes, yes, Miss Morgan is right. I remember hearing of old Parkinson, but he's too far back for me.
A beautiful, beautiful, pure, sweet, mellow English tenor. Oh, well. Ah, here we are. Thank you, Greta. Look, look what she has.
The pudding.
Oh, the pudding.
Miss Julia's pudding.
Oh, the finest there is.
Oh, that there is.
I don't think it's quite brown enough.
Well, I hope, Miss Morgan.
Yes, Mr. Brown.
That I'm brown enough for you. Because, you know, I'm all brown.
Well, now, here's your celery, Gabriel. I know you don't eat sweets.
Now, I'll have a stalk of that as well. It's good for the blood, so my doctor tells me.
My son, Freddy, is going down to Mount Mellery in a week or so. The air is so bracing down there, and the monks so hospitable. They never ask for a penny from their guests.
Do you mean to say that a chap can go down there and put up there as if it were a hotel and live on the fat of the land and then come away without paying a farthing?
Oh, well, most people give some donation to the monastery when they leave.
Well, Mary Jane, I wish we had an institution like that in our church.
The monks never speak. They get up at 2 in the morning and they sleep in their coffins.
Why do they do that for?
That's the rule of the order.
Yes, but why?
Well, it's a rule, that's all.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
But you see, the monks are trying to make up for the sins committed by all sinners in the outside world.
Well, I like that idea very much. But wouldn't a comfortable spring bed do them just as well as a coffin?
Well, the coffin is to remind them of their last end.
Oh, I see, Mary Jane.
They are very good men, the monks, very pious men.
If you will all take a glass, we have port or sherry.
None for me, Miss Julia. Mm-mm.
Gabriel?
Oh, yes, of course.
It's time for your speech.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
No. Yes. Aunt Julia and Kate. Ladies and gentlemen, it has fallen to my lot this evening, as in years past, to perform a very pleasing task, but a task for which I'm afraid my poor powers as a speaker are all too inadequate.
No.
However that may be, I can only ask you tonight to take the will for the deed and to lend me your attention for a few moments while I endeavour to express to you in words what my feelings are on this occasion.
Well, of course. Mr. Conroy.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is not the first time we have gathered together under this hospitable roof, around this hospitable board. It is not the first time that we have been the recipients, or perhaps I better say the victims, of the hospitality of certain good ladies.
Miss Kate, Miss Julia, and Mary Jane.
I feel more strongly with every recurring year that our country has no tradition which does it so much honour and which it should guard so jealously as that of its hospitality. It is a tradition that is unique as far as my experience goes, and I have visited now a few places abroad among the modern nations. Some would say perhaps that with us it is rather a failing than anything to be boasted of, but granted even that, it is to my mind a princely failing, and one that I trust will long be cultivated among us. Of one thing, at least, I am sure. As long as this one roof shelters the good ladies aforesaid, and I wish from my heart it may do so for many, many a long year to come, the tradition of genuine, warm-hearted, courteous Irish hospitality, which our forefathers have handed down to us, and which we in turn must hand down to our descendants, is still alive among us.
Hand it down.
Ladies and gentlemen, a new generation is growing up in our midst, a generation actuated by new ideas and new principles. It is serious and enthusiastic for these new ideas, and its enthusiasm, even when misdirected, is, I believe, in the main, sincere. But we are living in a skeptical and, if I may use the phrase, a thought-tormented age. And sometimes I fear that this new generation, educated or hyper-educated as it is, will lack those qualities of humanity or hospitality, of kind humor, which belonged to an older day. Listening tonight to the names of all those great singers of the past, it seemed to me, I must confess, that we were living in a less spacious age. Those days might, without exaggeration, be called spacious days. And if they are gone beyond recall, let us hope, at least, that in gatherings such as this, we shall still speak of them with pride and affection, still cherish in our hearts the memory of those dead and gone great ones, whose fame the world will not willingly let die.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear.
But yet, there are always, in gatherings such as this, sadder thoughts that will recur in our minds, thoughts of the past, of youth, of changes, of absent faces that we miss here tonight. Our path through life is strewn with many such sad memories, and were we to brood upon them always, we could not find the heart to go on bravely with our work among the living. We have all of us living duties and living affections which claim and rightly claim our strenuous endeavors. Therefore, I will not linger on the past. I will not let any gloomy moralizing intrude upon us here tonight. Here, we are gathered together for a brief moment from the bustle and rush of our everyday routine. We are met here as friends, in the spirit of good fellowship, as colleagues, also to a certain extent, in the true spirit of camaraderie, as the guests of, well, what should I call them? The three graces of the Dublin musical world.
That's a grand place.
What did Gabriel say? What was it?
He said we are the three graces, Aunt Julia.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will not attempt to play tonight the part that Paris played on another occasion. I will not attempt to choose between them. The task would be an invidious one and one beyond my poor powers. For when I view them in turn, whether it be our chief hostess herself, whose good heart, whose too good heart, has become a byword with all who know her, or her sister, who seems to be gifted with perennial youth, and whose singing must have been a surprise and a revelation to us all tonight. Or last, but not least, when I consider our youngest hostess, talented, cheerful, hardworking, and the best of nieces, I confess, ladies and gentlemen, that I do not know to which of them I should award the prize. I raise my glass and let us toast them all three together. Let us drink to their health, wealth, long life, happiness, and prosperity, and may they long continue to hold the proud and self-won position which they hold in their profession, and the position of honor and affection which they hold in our hearts.
For they are jolly gay fellows. For they are jolly gay fellows. For they are jolly gay fellows. Which nobody can deny.
I need another handkerchief. I know I will.
Unless he tells a lie. Unless he tells a lie. For they are jolly gay fellows. For they are jolly gay fellows. For they are jolly gay fellows. There's nobody can deny.
Look at the time. Where does it go?
Oh, the morning air. Close the door, somebody. Mrs. Mallins will get her death of cold.
Mr. Brown is out there, Aunt Kate.
Oh, Mr. Brown is everywhere.
Really? He is very attentive.
He's been laid on here like the gas all through the Christmas. But tell him to come in, Mary Jane, and close the door. I hope to goodness he didn't hear me. Oh, Mr. Brown.
Well, I think Teddy will have all the cabs in Dublin out.
Is Greta down yet?
She's getting on her things, Gabriel.
Who's playing up there?
I don't know. I thought they were all gone.
Oh, no, Aunt Kate. Bartle Darcy and I believe Miss Furlong haven't gone yet.
Well, someone is strumming at the piano, anyhow.
Oh, it makes me feel cold to look at you two gentlemen in your coats and muffled up like that. I wouldn't like to face your journey home at this hour.
Well, Mary Jane, I'd like nothing better this minute than a rattling fine walk in the country or a fast drive with a spanking good goer between the shafts.
We used to have a very good horse and trap at home.
Oh, Aunt Julia, the never-to-be-forgotten Johnny.
Oh, now, the late lamented Patrick Morcan, our grandfather, that is, commonly known in his later years as the Old Gentleman, was a glue boiler.
Now, Gabriel, he had a starch mill.
Well, glue or starch, the Old Gentleman had a horse by the name of Johnny. And Johnny used to work in the Old Gentleman's mill, walking round and round in order to drive the mill. Now, that was all very well. But now comes the tragic part about Johnny. One fine day, the Old Gentleman thought he'd like to take a drive out with the quality to a military review in the park.
Oh, the Lord have mercy on his soul.
Amen. So the Old Gentleman, as I said, harnessed Johnny and put on his very best tall hat and his very best stock collar and drove out in grand style from his ancestral mansion, somewhere near Back Lane, I think.
Oh, now, Gabriel, he didn't live in Back Lane, really. Only the mill was there.
Out from the mansion of his forefathers he drove with Johnny. And everything went along beautifully. Until Johnny came in sight of King Billy's statue. And whether he fell in love with the horse King Billy sits on, or whether he thought he was back again in the mill, anyhow, he began to walk round and round the statue, like this.
I don't think he had on those galoshes.
Round and round he went, and the Old Gentleman, who was very pompous, you know, indignant Old Gentleman, he says, "Go on, sir. What do you mean, sir? Johnny, most extraordinary conduct. Can't understand the horse at all."
Oh, Johnny, oh dear. What a horse. Oh,
no. Sorry, I could only get one cab.
Freddie, you take it. We'll find another.
Yes, better not keep Mrs. Mallon standing in the draft.
Here, Mother, come with me. Let me help you into the cab. Now, here it is.
I'll take her on this side.
Oh.
Careful now of the step. Right. Into the cab you go.
Thank you, you're so kind.
All right then, Mother, come sit here. That's kind of you, Mr. Brown. Do come and join us.
What do you mean?
Here, take the cab with us.
This cab?
Yes. Now, we can drop you off.
All right.
Oh, now, grab here. Now, there you go. Here's my hand.
I got it. Thank you. Are you going my way?
Well, that depends on where you're going.
I don't want to take you off your route.
I will make the best of it.
We may be going in opposite directions.
Oh, sounds like you may need Johnny to take you round and round.
Who's Johnny? I'm not sure we can fit him in the cab.
Cabby, do you know Trinity College?
Yes, sir.
Well, drive bang up against Trinity College gates, and then we'll tell you where to go. You understand now?
Yes, sir.
Make like a bird for Trinity College.
Right, sir.
Who is that woman standing on the stairs? On the top, in the shadow. I can't see her face. The terracotta and salmon pink panels of her skirt edged against the baluster. Who? Greta, my wife. Greta, just standing, straining to listen to something. The music. How still she is, with such grace, as if she were a symbol of... What is a woman standing on the stairs in shadow, listening to distant music, a symbol of? Her blue felt hat against the bronze of her hair, the dark panels of her skirt showing off the light ones. If I were a painter, I would paint this picture. Call it distant music.
That's
Freddy. Well, isn't Freddy terrible? Oh, he's terrible. Really terrible.
Oh, Mary no. Jane.
Cold within my arms.
was Mr. Darcy. Is he coming down, Greta?
Yes, he is.
Oh, Mr. Darcy, it's a downright mean of you to break off like that when we were all in raptures listening to you. Miss Furlong, can't you persuade him to...
I've been at him all evening, and Mrs. Conroy too, and he told us he had a dreadful cold mm-hmm. and couldn't sing.
I'm afraid Miss Horse is a crow. Oh,
it's the weather.
Yes, Julia, everybody has colds, just everybody. We shouldn't bother Mr. Darcy with another song.
No, it's from the weather, it is.
They say we haven't had snow like it for 30 years, and I read this morning in the newspaper that the snow is general all over Ireland.
I love the look of snow.
So do I. I think Christmas is never really Christmas unless we have snow on the ground.
Oh, but poor Mr. Darcy doesn't like the snow.
I've nursed this cold for days, you know.
Be sure to cover around your neck, Mr. Darcy.
That's right, Mary Jane. Mr. Darcy, be very careful of your throat in the cold air.
Let me help you with your coat.
Thank you, Greta.
Can you tell me, what is the name of that song you're singing?
It's called The Lass of Ockram, but I couldn't remember it properly. Why? Do you know it?
The Lass of Ockram. I couldn't think of the name.
It's a very nice air. I'm sorry you were not in voice tonight.
Now, Mary Jane, don't annoy Mr. Darcy. I won't have him annoyed.
Good night, Miss Morgan. It's been a lovely time.
Good night, Mr. Darcy.
And I'll say my good nights as well. Thank you both.
Oh, our pleasure indeed, Miss Furlong.
Yes, we must be off. Good night, Aunt Kate, and thanks for the pleasant evening.
Good night, Gabriel. Good night, Greta.
Good night, Aunt Kate, and thanks ever so much. Good night, Aunt Julia.
Oh, good night, Greta. I didn't see you.
Good night now.
Good night. Safe home.
The morning is still dark. A dull yellow light broods over the houses and the river. It's slushy underfoot. Streaks and patches of snow lay on the roofs. Greta is ahead, her hands holding her skirt up from the slush. She walks so lightly, so erect. The blood rushes through my veins. I want to run after her, catch her by the shoulders, say something foolish and affectionate into her ear. How I remember the fires of stars. Moments of our life together. Our secret life. Oh, how I want to make her forget the years of our dull existence together and remember only the moments of ecstasy. That the children, my writing, the household cares have not quenched our soul's tender fire. I want to remind her of my letter to her. When I wrote... Why is it that words like these seem so dull and cold? Is it because there is no word tender enough to be your name? Oh, I long to be alone with her. In our room in the hotel, we will be alone together. She'll be undressing and I will call her name softly.
Here's a cab, Gabriel.
Yes, good. The Gresham, if you will.
Yes, sir.
Here's a shilling for you.
A prosperous new year to you, sir.
And the same to you. Greta, let me help you.
Thank you.
Her touch, her arm on mine, the music and perfume of her. How proud and happy I am that she is mine. Oh, the feel of her, the longing. The fire stirs away the freeze. We've escaped our home and friends and duties and have run away together, wild and radiant hearts as one, to new adventures.
Can I help you?
Yes, Porter. We have a room waiting.
Ah, yes, sir. Let me light a candle. Would you... Follow me upstairs now.
Greta holds her head slightly bowed in her assent, her skirt girt tightly about her. How I want to fling my arms about her hips and hold her still. How I want to seize her. Seize her now!
Here we are. What time would you like to be called in the morning, sir?
8, if you will.
Fine, sir. I'm sorry about the electric light. It doesn't
seem... That's fine. We don't need any light. We've light enough from the street.
Yes, sir. Good night, sir.
Greta, we can throw our things on the couch here. They'll keep... Here, I'll take your hat. Greta.
Yes?
You look tired.
I am a little.
You don't feel ill or weak?
No, tired, that's all.
You might be cold standing at the window.
I'm fine.
Oh, by the way, Greta.
What is it?
Well, you know that poor fellow Malins?
Yes, what about him?
Poor fellow. I mean, he's a decent sort of chap, after all. He gave me back that sovereign I lent him, and I didn't expect it, really. It's a pity he wouldn't keep away from that Mr. Brown, because he's not a bad fellow at heart. Why is she so abstracted? Is she annoyed about something? If only she would turn to me and come to me of her own accord. To take her as she is, it'd be so brutal if I...
When did you lend him the pound?
I want to crush her body against mine. To take her. Oh, at Christmas. When he opened that little Christmas card shop on Henry Street.
Well, you are a very generous person, Gabriel.
Ah. A kiss. Her sudden kiss. Her hands on my shoulders. How her fair hair feels entwined in my fingers. Perhaps her thoughts have been running with mine. Oh, she's come to me. Her desire is mine. But then why is she so diffident? Oh, how it feels to have her head between my hands, my arms now around her. Greta, dear. What are you thinking about? Tell me what it is, Greta. I think I know what is the matter. Do I know?
I'm thinking about that song, The Loss of Ochre.
Greta, why are you hiding your face? What about the song? Why does that make you cry? Why, Greta?
I'm thinking about a person long ago who used to sing that song.
And who was the person long ago?
It was a person I used to know in Galway. When I was living with my grandmother.
Someone you were in love with?
It was a young boy I used to know named Michael Fury. He used to sing that song, The Lass of Ochre. He was very delicate. I can see him so plainly. Such eyes as he had. Big, dark eyes. And such an expression in them. An expression.
Then you are in love with him.
I used to go out walking with him when I was in Galway.
Perhaps that was why you wanted to go to Galway with that Ivers girl.
What for?
How do I know? To see him, perhaps.
He is dead. He died when he was only 17. Isn't it a terrible thing to die so young as that?
What was he?
He was in the gasworks.
I suppose You were in love with this Michael Fury, Greta.
I was great with him at that time.
And what did he die of so young? Consumption, was it?
I think he died for me. It was in the winter, about the beginning of the winter, when I was going to leave my grandmother's and come up here to the convent. And he was ill at the time in his lodgings in Galway and wouldn't be let out. And his people in Uachtarard were written to. He was in decline, they said, or something like that. I never knew rightly. Poor fellow. He was very fond of me. He was such a gentle boy. He used to go out together walking, you know, Gabriel, like the way they do in the country. He was going to study singing only for his health. He had a very good voice, poor Michael Fury.
Well, and then?
And then it came to the time for me to leave Galway and come up to the convent. And he was much worse, and I wouldn't be let see him. So I wrote him a letter saying I was going up to Dublin and would be back in the summer, and hoping he would be better then. Then, the night before I left, I was in my grandmother's house in Nuns Island packing up, and I heard gravel thrown up against the window. The window was so wet I couldn't see, so I ran downstairs as I was and slipped out the back into the garden. And there was the poor fellow at the end of the garden, shivering.
And did you not tell him to go back?
I implored of him to go home at once and told him he would get his death in the rain. But he said he did not want to live. I can see his eyes as well as well. He was standing at the end of the wall there, where there was a tree.
And did he go home?
Yes, he went home. And when I was only a week in the convent, he died and he was buried in Uachtarard, where his people came from. Oh, the day I heard that! That he was dead!
The snow is falling. Greta is asleep. So, she had that romance in her life. A man had died for her sake. Ugh. How poor a part I have played in her life. As if she and I never lived together as man and wife. Look at her face, her hair. What was it like, her first girlish beauty? And now, I see her face now, no longer beautiful. No longer the face for which Michael Fury had braved death. There lies her clothes over a chair. A petticoat, string dangles to the floor. One boot upright, its limp upper fallen down. The fellow of it lay upon its side. Where did my riot of emotions an hour ago come from? Where did it come from? My aunt's supper? The foolish speech? The wine? The dancing. The pleasure of the walk in the snow. Poor Aunt Julia. The haggard look upon her face while she sang Arrayed for the Bridal. She too will soon be a shade, with the shade of Patrick Morgan and his horse. Soon, perhaps, I'll be sitting in that same drawing room, dressed in black, my silk hat on my knees. The blinds will be drawn down, and Aunt Kate will be sitting beside me, crying and blowing her nose and telling me how Julia had died. And my words to her will be lame and useless. Yes. Yes, that will happen very soon. One by one, we are all becoming shades. Better to pass boldly into the other world, in the full glory of some passion, than fade and wither dismally with age. How Greta has locked in her heart, for so many years, the image of her lover's eyes when he told her that he did not wish to live. I've never felt words like that toward any woman. But I know that such a feeling must be love. The snow is falling again. The flakes, silver and dark, are falling obliquely against the lamplight. Yes. Yes, the newspapers were right. Snow is general all over Ireland. It's falling on every part of the dark central plain, on the treeless hills, falling softly upon the Bog of Allen, and farther westward, softly falling into the dark, mutinous Shannon waves. Snow is falling upon every part of the lonely churchyard, on the hill where Michael Fury lay buried. It lay thickly drifted on the crooked crosses and headstones, on the spears of the little gate, on the barren thorns. Snow is falling faintly through the universe. And faintly falling, like the descent of their last end upon all the living and the dead.
The water is warm.
As deep,
but not as deep.
You have listened to Dubliners, a Quartet, an audio play suite in four parts written by Arthur Yorinks, inspired by the stories of James Joyce, directed by Arthur Yorinks and Jim Simpson, recorded live at the Green Space at WNYC and WQXR in New York City. The acting company included Glenn Seven Allen, Cormac Cullinane, Terry Donnelly, Peter Garrity, Sean Gormley, Dana Ivey, John Keating, Sean McNall, Aideen Maloney, Maddie Scher, Fina Tobin, and Fiona Walsh, with Dominique Brion, Adeline Horan, John Huggins, and Hank Lynn. Our vocal soloists were Glenn Seven Allen, Catherine Guthrie, and Melissa Hughes. Our chorus included Emily Calderon, Lauren Tucker Cross, Anna Janicki, Savannah Gordon, David Saliers, and Stephen Weber. Our musicians were Cecilia Coleman on upright piano, Edward Barnes on grand piano, Steve Gibb on guitar, and Caleb Pasqua on fiddle. Musical arrangements and music direction by Edward Barnes. Casting by Kaleri Casting. Associate producer and dramaturg was Sarah Montague. Dialect coach was Stephen Gabbis. The producer for The Green Space was Jennifer Sendro. Recording engineer and editor was Chase Culpon. Sound effects by Ricardo Fernandez and Gaines Laguerre. This recording was directed by Arthur Yorinks. Leadership support for A New Theater of Sound and Dubliners is provided by the Sidney E. Frank Foundation. A thank you to Noreen O'Loughlin, and special thanks to Aaron Daly and everyone at the Flea Theater. I'm Isolt Tyler.